Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Welcome to the Knights Group Holdings Interim Results Webinar. I now hand over to David Beach, CEO, Kate Lewis, CFO, and Richard King, COO. David, over to you.
Thank you very much, Tamsin, and welcome everyone to our half-year results update. So I think the first point I want to highlight about the period reporting, which is the half-year to 31 October, is how we've scaled the business. As most of you know, we were pretty much one of the first to corporatise a law firm from partnership into our corporatised model. That was 9 years ago. And I think we then showed that that worked in the first few years. As we came to market in June 18, I think we started to see critical mass, and we achieved that through IPO and in the first year. I think what we're now seeing in this period is the scalability of this. We added over 300 fee owners in April. And in this period, I think you've seen how that's we've been able to achieve 45% growth to our revenue through what is obviously been a very challenging period. We had a difficult Q1. No question about that. The last April was difficult, our last month of the previous year, and then May, June, July were challenging. But we soon saw things stabilise in August and then into September, October, and we're delighted, I think, the way the business has come through this, that we really do now see that we're through this. I think the health risk is clearly now at its highest. I mean, they're sort of eye of the storm with the virus. And all our people have remained at home, therefore, for that reason. But as a business risk, I feel that we're through this and the business risk is low. We keep an eye on it, obviously. You never can be certain at the moment of what's going on. But I think we've really sort of gone through the difficult period in that Q1. We saw it stable and we've been able to scale the business even through that period. So, yes, we saw some challenges in that first quarter, but I think the way the acquisitions integrated and enabled us to achieve the growth that we've shown. And I think that's now demonstrated that we've got a leading national business that's sort of in the making here, and we continue to scale the business. And I'm going to talk, after Kate's gone through some of the numbers, how we are going to set about really taking our market advantage that we have now. We've built this leading firm outside London. Here, we're just showing the growth that we've achieved since IPO and that scalability that we're now witnessing in this period. So 42% compound annual growth for the revenue over the last 3 years, if you include the consensus expectation, which we're in line with. But also our focus on profit and cash generation is always the priority. And we've managed to increase underlying PBT by the 4 percentage points that's demonstrated by that bar graph through the acquisitive growth and through the organic growth. A couple of highlights here I want to mention is we really feel as we've stabilised through this challenging period, scaled the business that I've mentioned, but we've now, I think, got a really stable and happy ship. We've spoken to our colleagues more in this lockdown period than we've ever spoken to them. We've had a lot of new colleagues to speak to through all the VidCon and webinar facilities that we've now learned to use. It's become daily routine, and I think we've really created a very stable and happy place to work for our senior people and all of our other colleagues, fee owners and operational support colleagues. That's shown by very low churn there, low single digit 4% for our senior fee owners. And our net promoter score, we're very keen to ask our employees how they're feeling regularly. And if we compare the December's net promoter score of plus 43 to the previous one we did in May of plus 36. So I think we've got a very stable and happy place to be in it. When you're a people business, your people are your only asset. That's absolutely critical to know how your people are feeling and to talk to them a lot. And that's what we've done through these difficult periods of lockdown. Particularly, I would say, at New Year, the first thing we did on the 4th of Jan was hold a webinar, which was our most attended webinar of 1,000 colleagues. And they felt very, very reassured that we're feeling confident about the business, that we're in a strong and stable place and now ready to continue to accelerate our growth. The last point on this slide is that it's official that over the last 4 years, when you look at the lawyer report, which is probably the most detailed report about all law firms, that we are the number one fastest growing legal services business. Here, I don't want to steal Kate's thunder, so I'll just mention a couple of things, and it's around the cash conversion. You can see there 103%. And again, delighted the way that we've brought on those four acquisitions that we made in April and the way that we've worked hard to integrate those people. We have to change how people think about turning their work into cash from the traditional law firm model. It's very different how we go about it. And I think to end this period, we're reporting at the same number of lockup days as we were the previous year. Then I think that's a hell of an achievement, considering how many people joined a very different mindset to turning time into cash. But profit and cash are always our priority, as I've mentioned. So without going into any more details, I'll now hand over to Kate, if I may, to run through some of the detailed financial results for this period.
Good morning. As David said, I'm delighted with the results for the half year, considering the sort of macro environment that backdrop that we've performed in. Just to pick out a couple of the highlights from this, the acquisitions, as David talked about, have all performed exceptionally well during the period. They've integrated really well and actually performed slightly ahead of where we would have anticipated them to for the first half of the year. So income from them is £19.1 million. And that's offset by the decline in the organic business, which was due to COVID. As David talked about, we were hit by COVID in the first quarter of the year in particular, as quite often transactions just couldn't happen because although we managed to go out and we managed to sort of be up and running from working from home from day one, we found quite often that the other sides of transactions couldn't do that. And so it did slow down completion of transactions and work coming in during the first quarter as people just got used to working in the new environment that we're now in. Pleased to say that that's now stabilised. And, you know, the following lockdowns that we've had in November and now in January, we've not seen any of that impact at all. So I wouldn't expect an impact due to the current lockdown on the organic growth rate. Despite that hit in turnover, we're really pleased actually to have maintained gross margins. And we did that because, as you'll recall, back in April, at May time, we took a very swift decision to look at our costs and look at our cost base and make sure that we were properly set for what we saw was going to be a difficult trading period. And so you'll recall that we agreed with all staff that were earning over £30,000 that they would take a 10% pay cut, and the board took a 30% pay cut, and we did a bit of restructuring to take out any underperforming or underutilized fee earners at that time. And I think that put us in a really good place and has helped us to maintain our gross margin. It also meant, because we made the correct business decisions, that we felt the correct thing to do was not to use any of the government furlough schemes. We thought it was correct for us as a profitable business to just make the right business decisions, create the environment we felt was correct going forward, and not use the government furlough scheme, which we didn't during that period. So pleased with that and our margins to have maintained. We have, as we've seen, that the business has now returned to where we would expect it to, and trading has increased. We have gone back to full salary levels as of 1st of November, and so those will come through in the second half of the year. But that's because we could see our trading coming back to where we'd expect it to be. In terms of operational staff costs, they are slightly higher if you compare them to the same period last year. The reason for that partly is because the organic decline was slightly below where we'd expect it to be. But also, if you'll recall, during the second half of FY20, we invested in the support staff. So we brought in some quite senior support, so client service directors, into the teams who have been managing the acquisitions that we've done going forward. And we saw it really important as part of our business to keep the business stable and not to cut back on that, because we want those people within the business to grow the business further as we see the future growth as we come out of this pandemic situation. Taking all of those costs together and the cost savings that we've had, there's been a slight decline in margin if you compare us from October 19 to October 20. The main impact of that is obviously the decline in the organic growth, slightly offset by the fact that during H2 of FY20, we invested in the support staff costs. But we would expect to see that margin starting to increase as we see the organic growth coming through. As we do at the moment, we see positive organic growth at the moment, and would hope that by the end of FY21, that we will be back to the double-digit organic growth we would expect to see. All of the costs, we cut back where we could do, but it was important to us to keep the business intact for future growth, and so we made cost savings as and when we could, and the key cost savings that we talked about was obviously the staff cost. There was a slight reduction if you compare our finance charges as a percentage of turnover compared to last year because of the improved rates that we got when we renegotiated the facility in March 2020. So on here, I've just done a brief bridge just to show visually what we've just talked about. So I'll just talk about it quickly. You can see that we started 5.3 million PBT October 19. The key differentials for that is obviously the estimated PBT from the acquisitions. That's taken the 19 million turnover that they generated and the estimated PBT on that. Obviously, we fully integrate and we don't report PBT by acquisitions, but we've done an estimated there, which added 3.1 million of PBT. And then that was hit by the net impact of the COVID. So the net impact there, the 4.8 million decline in organic growth, were offset against the cost savings in terms of salary costs and some admin savings that we made, means that we estimate around about 1.7 million hit on our PBT for the period. There's then the investment in the support staff costs, which we've talked about, and a slight benefit from other income in the period, taking us through to 6 million PBT this year. On the balance sheet, if you compare October 19 to October 20, there looks a significant difference, but the main difference in all of the categories really is due to the acquisitions that we did last year. So if you compare to April 20 to where we are at October 20, a very comparable situation. The only figures that have moved significantly are the finance leases, so the investment in properties. As Dave has talked about, we see our offices as an important part of our future. We think that it's important for our culture that people work in offices, and so we have taken this time to consolidate some of our offices. There were some Birmingham offices. We did two acquisitions last year, which were coming towards the end of those offices. So we've managed to consolidate those into some nice grade A offices going forward. And also Nottingham, we consolidated four smaller offices, again, at the end of their leases, into a larger office coming forward. And Leeds, we took the opportunity on some really good deals that we've managed to negotiate because of the pandemic to go into grade A space there. Because we do see offices as being key to us going forward. And then just to highlight on there, the net debt has come down from the period end from 15.9 to 14.4. I'll talk about the key elements of that going forward, but just to highlight there that at the moment that is shown at 0.6 times what we the consensus FY21 EBITDA. And given that we have a facility of 40 million, it gives us lots of headroom to be able to go forward and look at acquisitions in the future. We've always talked about how important cash conversion and lockup is to us. Our cash conversion is very important, and the way we manage our cash conversion, really, we managed to generate such strong cash conversion, which was 103% for this year, is through mainly our management of lockup. And our lockup we define basically as being the amount of time it takes to convert a unit of time being spent on a matter to us actually getting the cash in the bank. And we add up our WIP days and our debtor days, which gives us our lockup. We target for the core business, our core business, around about 90 days. We aim generally for people to take around about 60 days for the work to be billed and then 30 days for the cash to be collected. And generally, we operate at around that level. Half year is always slightly higher. You can see there the half year figures for the past 4 years. Really pleased at this year end that we've managed to maintain it at 94 days, excluding the last three acquisitions, which is very comparable to where it was at last year. At the year end, we were at 85 days, and I would hope that we would, by the time we get to April 21, we will have brought that lockup down further. And I've just put on the side there the lockup days at acquisition. The key to us, and what I think one of our key differentials, is how much better we are than the rest of the market in our lockup. Average lockup for other law firms is around about 145 days, and we're normally targeting around about 90 days and achieving around about that level. This does present us with an opportunity when we go in and we acquire businesses, because as you can see there, when we go in at acquisition, the lockup in the companies that we acquire is normally an awful lot higher than our lockup. And that gives us an opportunity to get cash out of those acquisitions and to work with them. And this is one of the key roles that our client service directors that I talked about before take on when they go and they integrate the people culturally and they make sure that they settle into the Knights way of doing things. But they also concentrate on financial management of the businesses and work with the acquired businesses to collect their cash quicker. And how we do that, it's not rocket science. We basically encourage them to phone their clients and collect the cash and run their business like a normal corporate business would do, to bill regularly and to collect the cash. It takes a bit of time to do that. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a cultural realignment for the people in the business and also for the clients that they work with to get that set up and to get engagement set up properly so that we can interim bill and we can bill regularly. But as you can see there, we've made good improvements already on some of those acquisitions. EGL and ERT, which we acquired December time, they've come down from 140 days to 112 days. ASB Law has made improvements, not as big improvements, but that actually was acquired right at the end of April and it didn't come on our systems until June time. Therefore, we've not had quite as long to work with that. So we will be continuing to work with that. And that is currently coming down even further. And then Shulman's and Fraser Brown, you can see we've made good progress with those. So we've bought on average, I estimate lockup has come down from acquisitions by around sort of 16, 17 days, which equates to cash out of those businesses of around about £1.5 million. So that's cash generated, which goes towards funding the cash that we pay for the businesses. So a real positive for us. Just summarised here, the key elements of our net debt movement from where we were at the year end to where we are at the half year end. You can see there that we've paid out deferred consideration on the acquisitions of £3 million. CapEx, we spent on CapEx. As we've talked about, offices are really important to us going forward. And so we've moved into new offices and we've used this time whilst people have been out of offices working from home to refurb those offices, get them up to the grade A spec that we like our offices to be in, because we see that as a really important investment in a way of securing the acquisitions that we've done to give them a really good workspace to work in. Restructuring acquisition costs there. We acquired the businesses, the big businesses, right at the end of the year. And so those restructuring cash payments out as we've scaled down the support staff that they had and took out the back office staff, that obviously involves a cost. And also there's some cost in there relating to us actually renegotiating contracts and exiting some onerous contracts, which a couple of the acquisitions had. So we've pulled those out and that has incurred cash this year. Operating cash inflows, really strong operating cash inflows, 5.2 million. That comes from the strong cash generation that we have. We manage cash. We've generated cash of 103% this year, of which about 1.5 million of that has come out of acquisitions. And I think there's still some more that will come in the second half year. And then we have used and made use of the COVID VAT deferral scheme that the government offered up until the end of June. That has impacted cash flows by around about 3.6 million this year. We did benefit from that from 0.5 million during the FY20 year. So in total, as at the end of October, we owed 4.5 million in relation to the VAT deferral scheme. And this is our plan to repay that during H2. And we've started those repayments so that that's liabilities fully gone by the end of the financial year. So over here, I've summarised some of the KPIs that I've looked at. Obviously, cash conversion and lockup is really key to us, and we've talked about that in quite a bit of detail already. The other key KPI for us is gross margin and the profitability of the business. I've summarised here various other KPIs because I know for modelling purposes, it's important for you to be able to look at the number of fee earners and the fees per fee earner that they're generating. But actually, the key focus for us, as we've always talked about, is profitability of the business. Now, I've separated out here the group excluding Integrar and then Integrar. Just to explain very briefly what Integrar is, when we acquired the Lees business, Shulman's, in March, you may recall that they had a remortgage business as part of that business, which turns over approximately £4 million a year. That remortgage business is quite different in terms of its KPIs on a day-to-day basis than the rest of the core business. And so we rebranded Integrar. It's still part of the Knights Group. It's still reported within Knights, but we've rebranded it to Integrar during October, November. And when we come to the full year end, we will be reporting that as a separate business line down there because it generates such different KPIs. And so I've just summarised there the KPIs where we were at the end of October. And you can see that in fees per fee earner, it's generating less fees per fee earner than the Knight's core businesses. But actually, in terms of gross margin, it's a very attractive business to us because it generates very good gross margins. And so we are interested in that. The reason it generates such gross margins is because it's very much more of a volume type business. And so the level of fee earners in there is much lower. So they're more paralegal based, but we managed to generate a really good gross margin. So it's a really important part of our business for us. But if you were to look at it purely on fees per fee and without that gross margin, it's a lower gross margin. So that's really to aid with your forecasting going forward. You can see both generating good margin, but a different breakup of how we get there. And that's it on the financials. I'll hand over now to David, who will talk about how we intend to scale the business going forward.
Thanks very much, Kate. So what we saw in lockdown was really interesting with how we hire people. How we grow the business organically is largely made up from attracting new clients to our business, increasing the client lists and the quality of our clients by hiring the people with the relationships. Outside London, it's much more focused on the relationship model where partners and senior fee earners have relationships with people, and those clients follow partners if they move businesses. So we hire people to grow the business organically. And what we saw in lockdown, as the business stabilised towards the end of Q1, we really did start to focus on recruitment. We have a recruitment director that's now been with us just over a year, and that's changed how we go about this. And we saw 18 partners actually join in the first half. And what we were seeing was some partners being asked to put more capital into the traditional partnership model, some being asked to, as well as put more capital in, take a reduction in drawings. And obviously that created a sort of churn in the marketplace. So we were delighted with the number, but also as we've started to see the scalability that I've mentioned, we're starting to attract different people from other top 50 law firms. At 100 million, we're ranking sort of around about the 40th. And this is important to people who are coming from top 50 law firms to feel that leap isn't a step down, but actually they can go into a business where they're well supported and their clients can follow because we have the breadth, depth and of resource to support a quality client following. And that's what we've seen. We expect this to continue. This is a priority to us. Just as much as looking at acquisitions, which I'm going to touch on, recruitment is absolutely how we maintain our double-digit organic growth, which we're very focused on. And the first half that we're reporting here shows that 18 actually joined in the period. And the pipeline is continuing. We're seeing already 12 signed up to start in the second half, and we anticipate carrying on recruiting like this as we go through. I think January 31st is an interesting time for partnership models because that's when all the tax has to be paid. We've got deferred income tax from last July now to be paid together with the January instalment. We've got the furlough coming to an end, which 70% of law firms used. As you heard, we didn't. So we really see churn coming up even more so going forward. And this is a big opportunity for our unique model where partners can de-risk financially from the partnership model, get their capital out, repay the borrowings that they may have taken for that capital account. And that financial de-risk is a real push to our model, as well as us being out in the market looking to attract the talent. People are calling us as well, occasionally out of the blue, saying, can I come and talk to you? Because they realise that they can de-risk, earn the same money, onboard their clients, which is really important to them. Some of them have spent 20 years building the relationships. So that's very important that they feel in a good place. And I think we've never been in a stronger position now as a business with the scalability, but also in these conditions where I think it's choppy waters for the next few months in the traditional law firm model. So we're very excited about our positioning to continue to grow the business in this way through hiring some top talent. I just want to quickly touch on a question we get asked quite a lot at the moment, understandably, is how our office is going to feature going forward. And the simple answer is they remain just as important coming out of lockdown in hopefully a few months' time as they were before COVID came along. And the reason for this, any of you who were on our capital markets day that we had will have heard James Sheridan, one of our client service leaders, talk about not underestimating the importance of our Grade A offices. They do two or three things that are really crucial. When we do an acquisition, one of the best things we can do to sort of accelerate and maybe even complete the integration of those acquired people coming on board is to actually move them, if we can, into a new office that makes them feel very much part of the Knights family and group, that's grade A, that makes them feel elevated and feeling ready to challenge the local competitive market they're in. So we've done that in Birmingham, Nottingham, Leeds. This is really important for cultural integration. If you invest the 20 million that we did in Leeds, the best thing you can do is find the best space, which we did in the Majestic building, and then move the people in there. That really secures the investment and culturally integrates. I think the second thing it does is attract more talent. People in law, they sort of want to know that they're making a good move, a safe move, their clients are going to be looked after. I've mentioned that with the breadth and depth of resource that we now have with our scale, but being in the best locations is part of that. So we absolutely see offices remaining as an important feature of our business model and our culture. This is not a work from home business model. This is a work together to share the work across different experience levels. So you have partners with the expertise and the relationships, associates doing the work, and paralegals processing. This delivers a cost-effective solution so clients get value for money. This is a really important blended experience team approaching every job and task that we do. It also enables us to cross-refer. People being together, learning about each other, getting to know each other, trusting each other, means that we can start to really improve and accelerate our cross-selling so that we do more for client, which is gradually now starting to really get some momentum as well. And that's another way of fueling our organic growth, by doing more for the clients. Being together in the same locations is important. I think we will see, now that home working has been so legitimized in the last sort of year, I think we will see that we'll get more out of offices. As long as our team ethos and being together is leading flexibility, we definitely see now people spending a bit more time at home going forward, but it will follow that team ethos of being together. So that, I think, just explains how we feel about offices, and that's why we've invested in those offices through this period with fantastic deals where the landlords have funded the CapEx for us. So that's been, a real sort of added benefit through this whole situation. Here, I just want to chat on about M&A, and then talking about looking forward, as I've done with recruitment. We actually acquire businesses for two strategic reasons. The first one is to expand the geographical footprint and give us that credibility of having a well-regarded reputation by the firms that we acquire, bring them into Knights. It puts Knights into these locations. We can then organically grow through recruiting other talented people and partners into an existing platform. And you see on the top part of that slide, that's how we moved into Manchester when we acquired Turner Parkinson. That's how we moved into Leicester, Birmingham, Nottingham, Leeds, Crawley, Maidstone, and most recently Exeter. And I'm just going to talk briefly about Exeter in a second. So we've moved into all of those markets through those acquisitions. But the second reason we do acquisitions is to bolt on businesses. And often these may be smaller businesses. Not always, but often I think there will be smaller businesses. And bolt-ons are really, really useful to us, because they obviously leverage the overhead of the office that we've built. And we put, as I've mentioned, we put these acquisitions into really top quality grade A space. And then we can leverage the costs by expanding the amount of people through a bolt-on. It obviously sort of expands the capability of that business. But I think, as importantly, it kind of accelerates the momentum and feeling that we're in a new place, a new town or city, to really mean business. And I think a bolt-on sort of really confirms that momentum that we're looking to sort of bring as a breath of fresh air, hopefully, into a city compared to the traditional model. So that's why we do acquisitions. That's why they remain important going forward. I just want to briefly touch on the Exeter one that we announced in November. This was a small acquisition of 2.1 million revenue, but a very important acquisition, because the market is much larger than just that small acquisition. And already we've seen some very interesting partners talking to us who bring substantial client following. I think Exeter, it's obviously very far south in this southwest region, but it really opens up that southwest, starting with Truro at the very bottom. Exeter's sort of, I think, a real centre for it, and it moves up to Bristol. And there's some real talented people that I think we can now access, and we're seeing that already. It's been really interesting just in the last couple of weeks in January that we've been able to see some momentum grow there. So we're very excited about that. It's a real quality business. It just does make the corporate and real estate, there's two partners that sold their business to us, but very well regarded. The real estate partner's known as Mr. Real Estate in Exeter. Very excellent reputation. It, no question about it delivering the numbers it's done. But I think now it's in a bigger group. I think it's going to open up that whole Southwest region to us. And we're very excited about that opportunity. Here, I just want to quickly explain about acquisitions. In Shoreman's in Leeds, we've been able to put the York office organically, which we did a year ago, and then the acquisition of Leeds. And like we've seen Wilmslow and Manchester complementing each other, we see the same in York and Leeds. And they've come together brilliantly. In the last sort of 9 months, those two offices are really complementing each other. And you see there, we've recruited already some really nice partners, six partners of top quality in that Yorkshire market. And I think as we move into the sort of second year of that strategy in Leeds and York, I think we'll start to see some greater momentum in recruitment. Now we've established ourselves. Fraser Brown was the entry into Nottingham. And in both of these, it's the second bullet point there. What we see, I think there's sometimes it's slightly confused when we're talking to analysts around churn. I think some people think any churn is bad, and we don't see it that way at all. In real life, some of the churn is very important. The partnership model is very difficult to deal with and talk and navigate through a partnership deed when you have unperforming partners. It's very difficult for a partnership to effectively get rid of an equity partner. So you see unperforming partners. And when we go into these businesses, we sort of see some partners that do need to retire, and therefore we see churn, and that happens in the first 12 months. But what we also see in all of the 11 that we've done so far, certainly the ones which we did back in 2018 and 19, and I think the Capital Markets Day was useful in this regard, was we don't really see unintended loss. We get close to the key people. We give them some new opportunities in business that when they want that type of business career opportunity, if that suits them. And we really give them a whole new runway ahead of them that I think really motivates them and excites them. And we've seen that through all of the acquisitions. So hopefully that just gives some colour to the acquisitions. Just going forward now, where are we with our M&A? Well, we see now a real opportunity. Now we've integrated the ones which we did in April. The business is in a very stable and strong and happy place. Now we definitely want to look at acquisitions. I think we will see some delay while we're in lockdown. We need to get in front of the partnerships. We were lucky that we could meet the two partners in Exeter, and there were only two of them in between lockdown to do that. But with larger groups of, say, 10, 15, 20 partners or even more, we do need to get in the room to talk to them. So I think there will be a delay to our activity. It won't stop us getting to know the businesses and talking to the pipeline, which we've started to do. We'll certainly start to do as much preparatory work as we can through using the obviously the VidCon facilities that we have, and we'll carry on doing that. And I hope as we get to spring, summer, that you'll start to see us do more acquisitions. How many will depend on size. In our first 2 years, you saw us do four acquisitions and six. I think this year, as we get into it post-lockdown, will be similar. I think it'll be a similar type of volume and size. Who knows? There may be some smaller bolt-ons as well, as I've explained. But we're certainly excited about the potential as the churn occurs in the traditional partnership model, which we're seeing. So I'll now just hand over to Richard. Some of you have met Richard before. He's our COO. He joined 2 years ago, very much with the intent to lead automation of our business and how we embrace technology. So I'll now hand over to you, Richard.
Morning, everybody. Yeah, as David says, technology has always been a core part of our strategy. From day one, we wanted to create a single cohesive business, rather than a collection of businesses that we might have acquired that really were more part of a sort of confederation than a single cohesive whole. And what we had done back in the early days was create a single platform. And we've been able to maintain that single platform through the 11 acquisitions, ensuring that we're introducing no new systems and so on. So that's been the basics. And we've been fiercely protective of avoiding increased complexity. But where our energy has been focused is on three things. The first one is on creating a fully robust foundation so that we create the runway so that we can continue to grow the business. We've tripled the size of it over the last couple of years, and we've now got a foundation that allows us to do that again. The way we've done that is adding on a couple of key areas to what we had at IPO. The first one is what we call our hub, and this is a single place for all of our people, processes, and data to keep that fully under control and to make sure we've got all the same information and one version of truth, if you like, across the whole business. And that's putting us in a terrific position because we've got one practice management system for all of our matters, all of our financials. We've got our hub for all of our people information, and that's underpinned by a workplace technology that, as you know, allows us to work from home, allows us to work paperlessly, and allows us to flow work around the total business, irrespective of where people are sat. The other piece we've added in there, which is super important to us, is what we call our acquisition integrator. So I think you know that when we do acquisitions, we're typically integrating them off of our system, off of their systems onto ours, in a period typically of about 8 to 12 weeks. OTB Evelyn, which is a small one, we did that in 3 weeks. And the reason that's really important is twofold. Firstly, it allows the people that have joined our business to start working on the Knights processes and systems and ways and means as early as possible, so that they really do go through a transition and really join the business. And the second one, of course, is it allows us to harvest synergy savings by shutting down systems and various contracts. So that one is in place now. We've got the runway that will allow us to efficiently scale the business as we have done to date, and we'll be able to going forward. The second focus is around continual business improvement. There's a rich vein, and I'm sure you'll see it in your own businesses, of lots of repetitive tasks that could be automated. We've automated about 20 full-time equivalents worth of work over the last year or so, and we will continue to do that. It's your sort of Dave Brailsford, for those of you that are into cycling, the theory of marginal gains. You know, how do you get Bradley Wiggins or Chris Froome to be the best in the world? Well, what you do is you find lots of little things every day that add up to being something that is a structural advantage, and we continue to mine that scene very effectively. The other thing we're doing there, which is not rocket science per se, but is rocket science at least in the provincial, regional, legal sector, is using information to build the business. Let me give you a couple of examples. So cross-selling, often a challenge in professional services. One of the things we're able to do is to identify the matters that we know are coming close to completion, where it would be an ideal opportunity for either our sales force or our fee earners to go and cross-sell. A typical example might be an M&A transaction going on. If one business is acquiring another, you can probably guarantee that there's some real estate work coming out of that, probably exiting one premises, maybe needing to lease a new premises and so on. Equally as well, there'll be a lot of employment work coming out of that, whether it be cheaper transfers, new service agreements, redundancies, and so on. And you can imagine a lot of commercial work as companies renegotiate contracts, terminate contracts, and so on. In the legal sector, traditionally, as David's mentioned, you'll get fee earners that are very siloed. They're only typically thinking about their own work. So if I'm a corporate lawyer, I'm not thinking about any of that. We've got two things there. One is a culture that encourages sharing. The second thing is with the technology, using the data available, we can catalyze that cross-selling by actually proactively informing people, look, there is an opportunity here. Another simple example would be winning new clients. We have data that allows us to answer questions like, show me all the businesses with a certain turnover that have been growing at a certain rate where all of the directors are aged over 50. It's highly likely that they are going to get into some sort of M&A activity, either to sell their business to somebody else, get new partners, and so on and so forth. We're able to identify that in the market. So rather than going out cold calling, we do have a sales force, unlike most legal services businesses. We're able to pinpoint businesses quite effectively rather than just calling around using people's personal networks. And we can combine that with the data we have internally. So, you know, that question about show me the businesses with directors over the age of 50, we can add into that we have acted for in some way, shape or form, or been on the other side of a transaction of over the last 5-10 years. That's enabling us to pinpoint where we can create relationships and get moving. And that's yielding us some nice business wins. The third area, which is an area we're getting into increasingly, because the focus over the last couple of years has been on building out that one robust platform to scale the business, is in the area of service enhancement. And this is literally in the space of let's deliver better services than competition can. The primary focus is speed to serve and also freeing up Vienna's time so they can spend more of their time advising the client versus processing the work. And probably an easy example of that would be bulk employment settlement agreements. Those of you that were on the Capital Markets Day will remember Martin Price mentioning some work we've done with British Airways, where the scenario there was they've got 6,500 people that they were offering voluntary redundancy packages to who needed legal advice. They only have 14 days to make their mind up. Now, typically, other service providers would spend 3 or 4 days getting themselves ready to then come back and start advising the employee. That's only allowing them 10 days for them to make their mind up. We could advise them in a way where they had 13 days to make their mind up. We also put ourselves in a position where the fee owners, rather than processing all of the advice, processing the matter and so on, they could actually spend all their time advising the individual, putting their mind at ease. And the reason we were able to do that is we've used robotics. NIME is the technology that we use, and we've basically automated the process from the individual applying and asking for legal advice right the way through to the delivery of initial advice, invoicing, and so on. And that really is transforming what we're able to do. As a result of that, we've had a lot of client wins, whether it be Gatwick Airport, Virgin Atlantic, Dickies, a bunch of other clients I could reel off, because we have an offering that no other firm can offer at the moment, as far as we can see. And the reason I say that with some confidence is we know we've won some business where employers have tried with other legal services providers and have actually come to us because it wasn't really working out for them at all. So you'll find that this will be an increasing focus for us going forward, early days, but there's a lot of opportunity out there. But really what we've done is create a foundation, as I say, to triple the size of the business. Again, we've created that runway to scale very efficiently. We've been able to sustain our fee earner to non-fee earner ratio, you know, around 4, 4.5, that's the sort of ratio, versus an industry norm of 1.7 fee earners per non-fee earner. And also, as I say, we're creating the opportunity to create more and more wins with clients. So, David, let me hand back to you.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks for that. So in summary, so we can then deal with questions. We're after Q1, we've seen our business sort of becoming get to a very strong position with our trading. We feel very stable. We feel the ship is very happy with everything we've done. We've never communicated with our people as well as we've done through this lockdown period. And I think that therefore gives us great confidence that we will now return to double digits for H2. We are going to trade in line with market expectations. We're very confident about that. Obviously, we keep an eye on what's happening in the market and with COVID every day. It's not a time that you can be totally overconfident, but we are very confident about the way we've learned about our trading through this period and in lockdown. And we're very excited, as I've said already, about the opportunities. I think the legal profession, some of the changes, which we think from a decade ago was sort of due, I think are going to get accelerated now through COVID and lockdown. I think it's going to reveal a lack of investment in things like technology. And I think the silo culture that we see in the legal profession, I think, will be exposed more. And that sort of lack of balance sheet and cash behind the law firms and the traditional partnership model, we think is going to really, and we're seeing some early evidence through this lockdown and through recent months, will really yield great opportunities in terms of the recruitment and the organic growth. And also, as we can get to look at acquisitions properly post-lockdown, I think we'll see some really exciting opportunities to continue to accelerate our growth and our vision to become the number one and leading legal and professional service business outside London. So we feel in a very confident mood, but also an excited mood, and we feel ready now to really continue to scale our business, and we've got the sort of platform and resilience to do that. So at that, let's now hand over to questions, please.
And we have a question from Robert Plant of Panmure, who asks, what's the timing of lease renewals across the company, and is Knights being offered better rates?
Well, we've got 14 offices, Robert. We've seen quite a bit of activity with the lease renewals that we've mentioned. There was 4 in Nottingham. There was 2 in Birmingham. We were able to come to the expiry of those 6 leases and then consolidate all of that into 1 office in Birmingham, 1 office in Nottingham. So if I look at the lease renewals going forward for the new leases, then they're going to be 10, 15 years out. They vary with the other offices. We're just coming, if I pick Maidstone, that's coming up for a lease renewal in April. And we're using the opportunity now to look around that whole area for better space, like we've said before. So we'll be likely to be terminating that lease and moving on. So they vary. The new leases are going to be in the sort of 10-year region, maybe sometimes 15, and the existing offices will be coming up for renewal at various times.
Thank you. And we'll go to James Allen at Liberum.
Morning, everyone. So first question, for those staff that took a pay cut in the first half, do you intend to remunerate them in H2 to top that up as performance ramps up? And second question, could you give us an idea of potential cost savings going forward as everyone moves to more agile ways of working?
Okay, let me pick up on those, James, and morning to you. No, we're not going to be repaying the salary reduction that we made in the first half. And I think there's probably a couple of reasons just to sort of give colour to that. We communicated a lot with our people about what we did in March, April as we went into lockdown. And we did make some restructuring at that early time in March, April. And we let some people go where we could see underperformance. But then we made it very clear to our people that we were going to go into this together, stick together and stay together as one big team. And that meant they needed to share some pain because of what we anticipated with revenue decline, which we've now got the evidence of with hindsight. And that was very much to protect the jobs in our business. So at that stage, we had circa 1,150 jobs, and we said we're going to go into this together to protect the jobs. And we have to balance there, looking after the business and looking after our people. Priority was safety, being at home, but then protecting jobs by all sharing a small amount of pain, and obviously making sure that the business still performs in respect of all the investment it's had up to that point. So you have to balance these things. We protected jobs, we kept our people safe, and I think we made a satisfactory return on investment through the period. And that, I think, all puts us into a good place. Our people appreciate that. They understand it. We've talked a lot to them about it, so they understand exactly why we did it. We talked to them every month on the trading, just as we did whenever we could with investors. We kept them firmly appraised with how things were going. So I think the mood of the business, as I've said already, is in a really good place. And I think one of the major reasons for that is that we've talked to them a lot. You hear this a lot from people. We knew on the 4th January we had to talk to people again because they were feeling flat from another lockdown. And the moment we talked to them, and we spoke last week to all 230 partners, I got onto Zooms with all of those partners to talk to them about what we're doing with certain things. All this lifts the mood. But no, to answer your question, we're not going to be repaying that salary reduction. Your second point about, just repeat, James, sorry, your second question there?
It was more just about potential cost savings from a move to agile ways of working. So I think we've already spoken about lease costs, but whether there are maybe other areas of the business you could realise cost savings?
Maybe travel, maybe sort of around the sort of business development and expenses. But you're in the fringes there. I think the biggest areas that will utilise the offices, in our thinking, logically, to 20% more. So, you know, where an office was set up for 100 people, I think we'll see 120 people be able to use it because of the fact that people are maybe doing a day a week at home going forward. So it's that, you know, a day a week at home is a sort of 20% utilisation opportunity. So I think that's the big one to answer your question.
And we'll go to Sam Dindle from Stifel.
Morning, guys. 3 questions from me. Firstly, on organic growth, can you just clarify on the statement of double-digit organic growth in the second half? Is that 10% plus for H2, or is that getting back to a double-digit run rate at some point in H2? Secondly, can you give a sense of the contingent consideration and restructuring costs in the second half? And then finally, on sort of the impact of COVID on the industry and in terms of partners taking a different view of the risk reward, is it sort of logical to think that's more likely to drive the lateral moves in terms of just one partner to change their mind rather than an M&A deal for 5 to 10 partners where they may not all believe, you know, COVID has changed the risk reward? So just sort of any thoughts around that would be interesting. Thanks.
Great question, Sam. I'm going to ask Kate to answer the first two and I'll pick up the third one.
Yeah. So in terms of organic growth, Sam, where we look to and at the moment where we would anticipate being is that the organic growth rate for the second half will be double digit. So we would anticipate being double digit for the second half is where we'd hope to get to. And we're confident at the moment by looking at what we've done in the first half and the recruits that have come in. We've done 18 senior recruits in the first half. They will start to generate. And so we're confident that we will generate double digit organic growth for the second half. And then in terms of deferred consideration, I think if you look in the annual report last year, we said we'd expect around about 8 million for the full year. And we've incurred around about 3 in the first half. So that will obviously the difference of approximately 5 will be paid out. And that is generally because we did those large acquisitions at the end of April. And so we'll obviously have the first annual payment for those going out right at the end of the financial year.
I think if your third question, Sam, was saying, will this situation and the churn in the legal profession sort of focus us more on recruitment than acquisition? I think to some degree, it's a really good point. And we do really like recruiting individuals, and we particularly like recruiting teams. We've seen some recent team hires. One actually joined at the beginning of January that brought 4 of the lawyers. That's a team of 5, partner plus 4 in the regulatory and licensing world. And the team hires are excellent because they bring a client base with them that is even more secure because the client knows the partner and the associates and any other solicitors who have been servicing their needs. So it sort of all moves over a bit more intact for no consideration other than a small amount of working capital to get them up and running. So yeah, the answer to the question is we absolutely love the recruitment and the team hires even more so. But the acquisitions still remain important. Because, as I've said earlier, you can't recruit your way into some of these centres, particularly the larger centres. And if I pick one that's of interest to us, and at some stage I hope we'll be in it, I don't know when, and that's Newcastle upon Tyne, we think it's better to acquire and create a platform in Newcastle upon Tyne than try and recruit our way in. And once you've got the platform and you kind of invigorate it with some of our modern approaches to professional service life, then I think we become a breath of fresh air for others in that community to think about joining. And it's a lot easier and more efficient with the right types of centres to do it through acquisition. Leeds, Manchester, Birmingham are obvious examples of that. We would not have been able to get ourselves in. We would have wasted time and money and effort trying to recruit our way in to persuade teams. They need to know that the business is sort of a stature and status that is safe for them. There's a lot of that sort of status in their thinking. I think what has happened that is very relevant to your question is the fact that we now are starting to show the scale of the business. I mean, even in difficult circumstances, to grow the revenues as we've done and get through that sort of 100 million barrier, then we're in a position where I think we can start to see a few more individuals and teams join than we were before because of that status that people sort of feel about Knights and the fact it's starting to get some national presence for people. So I think both will be very relevant. I think both have got opportunities, recruitment and acquisition, to really go to even another level of and to accelerate our growth even further, which we're confident in. It will be interesting. We can only tell you how we see things, but I think when we come to report full year in July, I think it'll be very interesting to update you on what the next 6 months has shown us, particularly as we go through that Jan 31 cash pinch point for partnerships. And we're now very much ready to access the market for recruitment for individuals, teams, but also we're going to start to warm up the pipeline that we have of acquisition opportunities for the reasons I've said.
And just picking up on the motivation point that you raised there, I think for sure you'll have individuals that will, you know, feel the need for safety or a better opportunity that will move. But equally, you will have collections of partners in a business where the business is starting to struggle and they can't see a future for themselves where they will look to move. So I think that dynamic of uncertainty for partners and partnerships, we believe is only going to accelerate as a result of the pandemic. And I think it will drive both of those things that David mentioned.
And we'll go to Tom Brookhouse from Investec.
Morning, guys. Hope all is well your end. Just a few from me. Firstly, I wonder if you could speak to the 18 new senior hires in the half. Is that number gross or net? And if gross, could you possibly provide the net number? And then following on from that, you're saying that there's 12 more senior heads are expected to come H2 so far. So I just wondered if your assessment of the net senior hires for the year has changed since the FY20 results. And then just a quick one on staff salaries, and apologies if I've missed this, but I just wanted to confirm the salaries remain at full pay as we saw announced at the prelims back in November.
Okay, I'll deal with the last point very quickly. Yes, the salaries have all remained at full pay, and we certainly don't anticipate now, Tom, any more salary cuts going forward. So they've remained in full first November. To answer your question on the partners, the 18 show is a gross number for partners that have joined in that period. And the 12 is a gross number. I think what we will be able to update at year end is the number of hires, but then net numbers of senior fee earners. I think we can do that because we do have some senior fee earners that we churn that I've mentioned before, particularly as we look at the acquisitions, Tom, that we made in April. Once we've integrated it with the technology which is mentioned, once we start to get to know the people and how the teams are performing, once we've had 6 months of that under our belt, so once we've got to half year effectively, as we go into November, December now and January, we really do start to look into those businesses even further, particularly with that partner churn that we look to. We see that as a positive moment, as I tried to sort of clarify. There are some partners who are not performing that we actually see the morale lifted of the group often when we deal with a partner that the partnership couldn't deal with before. But we don't rush into that. Sometimes it's obvious with, say, the managing partner. If I pick the Leeds one, we had a chap, Tim, that was sort of managing senior partner and we couldn't see a role going forward, so never employed Tim. So when we see them on entry where they're obvious, where it's not blatantly obvious to us, we take our time because we need to understand the businesses as well. And you don't understand them properly till you've owned them and managed them and seen them in action. And then after 6 months, we start to see the partner number churn. So there will be a net effect, as you've highlighted there, of those numbers, definitely. The 18 and the 12 is merely to illustrate, compared to the 7 a year ago, just that we are seeing a difference now in the marketplace to the recruitment environment. They're not for modelling purposes, but we'll do all we can to help you with partners and fee earners, as we always do, as that's why we've been separated Integra to help you with modelling. But the highlighting 18 and 12 is simply to illustrate things have changed in our recruitment opportunities.
Sure. Thanks, David. And just quickly on prior year M&A, I know you gave guidance at the full year for 25 million, I believe. And today you've said that acquisitions have done better than expected. Can we still expect sort of 25 million all in from that prior M&A at the full year? Or maybe a bit more this year?
Tom, that 25 million was additional. So in last year's figures, there was 10 million, just over 10 million from the acquisition. So in total, you'd expect around about 35 million from the acquisitions that we've done. So I would say, yes, we've performed really well in this first half of the year. I would keep that sort of at around about that level. Ideally, there'll be a little bit more, but we always like to, and as David's just talked about, this churn, this positive churn, we like to build something in because we, that will affect top line. Although it may improve profitability, it may affect top line, so we'd like to keep that in just until we've properly settled down the businesses.
And we'll go to Steve Wolf from Numis.
Hi all, morning. Could you talk a little bit around some of the business lines and how they have performed, and sort of more importantly, how has that activity come back through the first 6 months of the year and into H2? So corporate, real estate, etc., and the phasing there. Secondly, have you got sort of examples perhaps you can give us of where you're maybe picking up business from competitors on the high street in some of the regions, with them impacted by COVID perhaps? And then thirdly, to Richard, in terms of the IT development that you've put in place so far, where do you envisage that going now? What more do you feel you could add or would like to add to improve efficiency? Thanks.
Yeah, I'll deal with the first two and I'll leave Richard the third one there. So as far as the different work types, we've got five main groups to keep this as simple as possible in the time allowed, and that's the corporate and commercial, litigation, real estate, employment, private clients. And we saw as we went into Q1, the biggest impact was in corporate transactions, sort of got put on hold. We saw a little bit in real estate, but our real estate business is very spread across a lot of day-to-day management, things like quarries, shopping centres, those sorts of things. So that we did see some impact in real estate on the transactions, but it was much less than corporate. Employment sort of looked like it was going to get going with furlough, and it did to a degree, but it was not really as much in the early stages as we thought. It then did gain momentum as we went into the second quarter. Litigation stayed around about where it was, and private clients started to really improve and increase. So the overall of that was the sort of, I think, the Q1 impact, well, the April and Q1, a four-month impact. Some of that was just the shock of businesses just sort of not knowing what to do and how this is all going to work. And it was also new. And I think we just felt the impact. The biggest one to identify, to answer your question, Steve, was corporate. What has happened to corporates? It didn't come back in August. September is always an interesting month for corporates. It's normally a sort of return to term. And then you see things happening. It took a bit of time. It didn't happen quickly, but it got going in November and December. We've seen a real sort of volume of transactions completing for November, December, and as we go into January. Some of that is also fueled by the potential CGT changes, which are speculated. So the corporates really come back, and we're very pleased we kept, you know, we've got 70 M&A lawyers throughout our 14 offices, and we've kept that firmly intact because that is the hardest area to recruit to and regionally. And I think we've now got a leading regional M&A team for people to go to. Which I think sort of segues into your second point about, are we winning work? I definitely see us now winning corporate work, competing from the other independent firms, and that would include sometimes the odd high street firm. But the other independent firms don't have the quality and depth of our M&A team. And we can put that M&A team against any of the top 50 now. And I think that's where we really are, sitting as a sort of unique size and culture next to the independents. I think we really are out competing them now for that corporate work, and we've seen some wins on transactions that have been quite meaningful to us for that reason. I think the other area where we're winning is on volume that Richard sort of highlighted there, with things like Virgin, Atlantic, British Airways. We've just gone on to the EasyJet panel, which I think is four firms. They've got Slaughter May as the sort of magic circle, but we're in there to do some of that day-to-day and some of the volume. And I think and we were able to sort of insist on our 30-day payment terms even in those situations. So I think we are starting, it's still early days, but I think we're starting to see opportunities through the scalability again in volume and definitely in competing with those independent firms. Richard, do you want to deal with the third question?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Steve. To your question, the two main areas are just continuing to increase our efficiency. And the second one is in enhancing services, and then just sort of drill into that a little bit. In the efficiency area, which is basically just task automation predominantly, but also process simplification, the place we've been playing mostly is on the non-legal processing side, so finance, IT, compliance, and so on. And what we see is moving increasingly into the work that the lawyers are doing. And the challenge there, to be frank, is mostly about the mentality of the lawyers more than it is about figuring out what needs to be done. Because by and large, compared to other sectors, and my background's consumer goods, the sector is probably about 20 years behind where you'd see other industries. The second area, so there's a long burn on that one, and just continued opportunity. And the second one, as I mentioned a moment ago about service enhancement, is mostly about speed to deliver advice and also shifting the work of the lawyer to be delivering more value-adding work, so more advisory work versus processing. And the areas that lend themselves most naturally to that are either repetitive work, so conveyancing would be a good example, the Integra business with remortgaging, debt recovery, bulk settlement agreements I mentioned a moment ago, but also areas of work where you've got vast volumes of information So if I think about dispute resolution, corporate M&A work, where you've got enormous amounts of information, that those are the places where using technology to discover what's inside the documentation, to do the triaging, to pull out the key information, are areas where there's a lot of opportunity. We've been doing some pilots in that space. And what we're finding is that the promise of some of the technology vendors exceeds what they're actually able to deliver. But equally, when people are providing value-adding tools, if you combine what they can do plus a willingness to fill in around the edges, I think there's opportunities there. So those are the two main ones.
And a final question from Joe Spooner at HSBC.
Good morning. Can I ask about what you're seeing in terms of bad debts on the performance and the outlook on that side? Are there any client exposures that perhaps you're looking at a bit more closely, maybe those exposed to hospitality, travel and other areas that may have been impacted more through this period? Thanks.
We haven't, because, Joe, we've always been really focused on lock-up and bad debts, and our debtor days are so low, we keep our exposure very low. We haven't suffered any significant bad debt write-offs at all. I wouldn't expect to. Our bad debts are at a very similar level to what they've always been. We don't have an awful lot of exposure to hospitality or retail, but our fee earners are very well versed, and our client service directors make sure that if there is any exposure, then we're looking at it. If we've got any concern at all, we get money on account before we do the work, so that we don't have many write-offs at all, because it's something that we've historically done. So it's something that people haven't had to change. We haven't had to change our systems because of the increased risk out there. People are already vigilant and we have systems in place. So I wouldn't foresee, because of the systems we have in place, any significant issues out there. Our fee earners are very good at controlling their debts.
And that's the end of questions. David, do you have any closing remarks?
Thank you all for your attendance and for listening. Really, just to sum up, I think we're feeling in a strong and confident place, as I've said already, and very excited about the opportunities ahead of us that will help us, we're confident, to maintain the momentum, which I think we've shown in this period that we're reporting. So, we're excited, very excited about the future that 2021 holds. And we hope to come out of this lockdown as soon as we can, because I think when we do, I think the nation has probably now got some pent-up energy that I think will even add to that excitement. So I'd sort of say to you all, stay safe. We've been staying safe. Everyone stay safe and look forward to talking to you, hopefully, maybe, who knows, it might be in person next time. So let's keep our fingers crossed. But then we bid you farewell and thank you very much. Bye for now.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.